Hi, I'm cooking up a fresh batch of my Sun Up Before Sun Protector. Last year, my family headed off to the sunny beaches of Riviera Maya for a much needed vacation. But I knew I wouldn't enjoy myself if we were smothering our skin with ingredients that cause reproductive disorders, hormonal imbalances, even cancer. Kind of takes that feeling out of a beautiful day, right? Now you can make every beautiful day delicious to your skin by using Sun Up Before Sun Protector by Primal Life Organics.
Welcome back to Making Bank. I am Josh Felber, where we uncover the success strategies and the secrets of the top 1%. And I'm really excited today. I have an awesome, unbelievable entrepreneur, Mike Koenig's in the house with me today. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Josh. Good to be here, man.
Awesome. Mike has built and sold multiple businesses. His last two businesses were publicly traded companies. He is also a 10-time number one best-selling author, serial entrepreneur, angel investor, filmmaker, and patented inventor. And Mike is also a stage 3 cancer survivor after completing 9 months of chemotherapy and 33 radiation treatments. And his doctors say he's healthy and cancer-free. Mike, you have such an amazing story. I'd love to dive in here today with you, help uncover what you have going on and how we can help everybody out there in the entrepreneurial world.
I'm all set to go, man.
Well, cool. So I guess, first, what got you involved in entrepreneurship? Did you start off when you were a kid? Did it happen later in life? What really got you connected with it?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I grew up lower middle class. My dad's a barber. He's 78 years old. He still cuts hair. He grew up very, very poor on a tiny farm in Iowa, and he got one pair of shoes a day. He got his first toothbrush of his own when he was 11.
Wow.
They started getting running water when he was around 9 or 10. So I grew up in a lower middle class environment where there were no extras. I'm the oldest of four kids. And first of all, I didn't like being cold. Second of all, I didn't like being poor. And when I wanted a computer, because I knew in my heart of hearts that I was going to change my life by learning how to write software, my parents said those unfortunate words, "We can't afford it." And at that moment on, I'm like, I'm going to figure it out. I was fortunate enough that a neighbor loaned me. In fact, he forced me to babysit his computer because he knew that we had no money. During a Christmas vacation, I taught myself to code, and I knew that that was going to be my way out of Little Eagle Lake, Minnesota, where to this day, wow, a lot of people I grew up with are still stuck there.
Sure.
And I shouldn't say stuck, because a lot of them love that small town environment. I never did. I felt like a total outsider. So I think it was a matter of just feeling rejected, completely out of place, a total black sheep, knowing that someday I wanted to work for Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak. I used to keep a backpack in my closet packed from age 14 on, ready to run away from home the first chance I had. So I barely passed high school. I never went to college, but I started coding. And I started consulting because my dad was an endless networker. And he'd say things like, my son loves computers. And invariably, an insurance salesperson or someone who managed a business would say, "My secretary, we just got a computer. We don't even know what to do with it. Do you think you could come in and teach my secretary or teach someone in my office how to use it?" And he said, "Yeah, I think you'd do that." And my dad would tell me about it. And I'd be like, "Yeah, hell, I can do that." I have absolutely no idea what I was going to do. And that evolved into someone saying, "I know this guy has got a business and he needs a billing or accounting system written. You think you could do that?" And I'd be like, "Yeah, I can do that." I mean, I had no clue. So I taught myself how to write, at the time, Pascal,
wow,
which is a programming language, in like 2 days, because I had a deadline, I was in the dirt, and I made a commitment, and I wasn't going to make my dad look bad, right?
That's awesome.
So I think the next layer was a friend that I went to school with. His dad worked at Unisys at the time, and he said, "I got a general here who needs some help, and all these knucklehead nerds can't figure out how to make a militarized mainframe computer in a submarine talk to a microcomputer. You think you can figure that out?" And I'm like, "Hell yeah, I can do that." So this is back in the day when a cable that connected one computer to another one was this big around.
Wow.
So, I mean, it just evolved, and pretty soon I started a business. I had no clue what I was doing. I mean, I'm just a stupid kid from Eagle Lake who didn't want to make his daddy look bad.
Right.
So that's my answer, man.
That's awesome. It's kind of interesting, you know, we have a similar parallel with, you know, I'm the oldest, obviously, and the other fact is I started a computer business when I was 14 because I wanted to have that Commodore Amiga computer. Didn't have the cash to do it. And so, no, that's really cool. And so what, you know, you've evolved over the years and, you know, started numerous businesses. Obviously, two of them now you said are publicly traded.
Yeah, they sold to publicly traded companies. I've built and sold seven. I've started countless when you include products. I mean, hundreds of products at this point. But go ahead, ask the question and I'll give you the answer.
Yeah, no, definitely. And so I guess what, along the way, there was obviously probably some failures and things like that. What was one of your biggest failures, you know, as an entrepreneur that, you know, did you ever look back and say, man, why am I doing this? And should I still stay in the game?
Yeah, well, I would say the short answer is how about 1,000 failures every year and you just learn from them and move on and go. Don't get attached to them and don't allow the trauma to get to you.
Sure.
But one of my biggest ones was really a combination of failures. So I had one of my first companies was called Digital Cafe. We were one of the first interactive marketing agencies and we didn't start out that way. It's just a couple of guys who wanted to make movies.
Right.
So at the time I had written video games, the company got sold, I was doing crap work, and I'm the worst employee imaginable. In fact, I am unemployable, and the only letters behind my name are ADHD and OCD. My business partner at the time had made, he and his brother had made 5 feature-length movies by the time they graduated from college in Super 8, okay? And so we were like, let's figure out how we can make movies and video games and combine them. And that was before the world of CD-ROM, before the world of the internet existed.
Sure.
And we started crafting movie scripts. In the meantime, we had to make a living. So we started this little agency doing like Photoshop retouching before anyone knew what Photoshop was. And I did digital audio editing. I had one of the first cards that could plug into a computer to capture video so we could manipulate video and output animations. And people would pay for this.
Right.
And agencies at the time didn't have in-house creative departments that knew any of this stuff. So one thing led to another. And pretty soon we were doing what were known as branded video games. We did a video game that shipped in 6 million boxes of breakfast cereal for General Mills that had America Online installation software on it. So America Online sponsored this thing.
That's cool.
And but before the big breaks, okay – we were broke and because we were working for agencies, they took 90 days to pay us sometimes. And we reached a point where I was using credit cards to pay my employees. We were $250,000 in the hole. I went through a recent, divorce because I couldn't keep my priorities straight. You know, it was like business all the time. And finally my wife decided to run out. Well, I should put it this way. She is an awesome human being. Really, really sweet girl who I grew up with, but she was more interested in one of my employees than me. I'll just put it that way. So that was a little kick in the you know what.
There. Yeah.
But then I got to the point I was living on my gas card. I was using a Super America gas card and buying my groceries in 7th Avenue in downtown St. Paul. And I watched a friend of mine who went from being a, you know, like he was in college for 7 years as a sophomore, full on alcoholic. Living on a trust fund, run out of money, had a crap job, and in 6 months, lost weight, quit drinking, became a vegan, and wrote a book, became a best-selling author, was on the road traveling all over the world. And I'm like, what in the hell did you do? And he said, I'll take you out for dinner next time I'm in town. And, you know, I'm living on freaking gas cards,
right.
And crackers, right? Picks me up in a brand new car he bought with cash, and I'm like, whatever you're doing, I need it. And he said, I went to a Tony Robbins event. I saw his infomercial on TV. I bought his thing, and I swore to myself, no matter what I do, I'd figure out a way to make it happen. So I left that place, walked in my apartment at the time, and in my mailbox is a brand new credit card with an $8,500 limit. I went upstairs, turned on the TV, and guess who was on?
Tony was on.
Tony was on an infomercial.
That's awesome.
So I picked up the phone. I called. I had it rush ordered. It was delivered. 2 days later, I'm opening up. I listen to the first 15 minutes. Inside's a coupon, good for $500 off one of Tony Robbins' event. Picked up the phone. The guy on the other end is a guy named Chris Hendrickson, who took my order. 2 weeks later, and by the way, they're sold out, but he said, I think I can get you a ticket anyway. So I racked up, put everything on this credit card, including my travel. It was like $8,100. So I got $400 to survive on. And 2 weeks later, I'm in Hawaii, filled with a room of 3,000 people jumping up and down and hugging. And where I'm from, hugging dudes means something else.
Just didn't go, yeah.
And I'm like, I'm going to get out of here. This ain't going to work for me. So for 3 days, I'm a grumpy jerk thinking about how now I'm really screwed, right?
Sure.
So after 3 days, I decided to start jumping up and down and hugging dudes like everyone else. And I walked out of that event, it was called Life Mastery, with a plan. And then 6 months later, I turned my life around. I lost weight, quit drinking. I became a vegan too. A year later, our business was being purchased by a $1 billion-a-year advertising agency.
Wow.
But I'm going to tell you, along the way, I was in a world of hurt, man. It sucked big time. It was like, I felt like the biggest stupid loser, and it didn't matter what kind of visible successes there were. I knew the truth behind the scenes was I was screwed, and I felt like a total failure. And you know, the truth is, it's everything's a mindset game, man.
Yeah.
Everything.
No, it's hey, can you stick around for us? We got to take a quick break.
Right on, man.
Awesome. I am Josh Felber, and you're watching Making Bank, and we'll be right back.
Now you can get your healthy superfoods in one drink with no shopping, no blending, no juicing.
Welcome back. You're watching Making Bank. I am Josh Felber, where we've left off speaking with Mike Koenigs about his business and the struggles that he went through and the challenges to overcome failure, overcome living off his credit cards, his gas cards, and going to a Tony Robbins event and actually transforming his life. Mike, welcome back to Making Bank.
Thanks, man. Good to be here, Josh.
So what was one of those key points that just switched everything on for you that you were able to come back and, you know, bust through and everything?
You know, I think it was having a compelling vision, and I was able to write down an entire life plan on one piece of paper. And
wow.
Some of it was driven by how do I want to feel? And being able to visualize an end game. So I got really, really, really specific. I got that way with my next mate as well. I wrote down every quality that I was looking for in someone. And interestingly, as a result of going down this path, going down the Tony path, I got turned on to Deepak Chopra, Wayne Dyer, a whole bunch of other people in that space. And a few years later, I ended up meeting a woman who's now my wife, who used to work for Deepak Chopra. She's a published author herself. And had worked in the field with some people whose number one clients and best of friends were Neil Donald Walsh, the Conversations with God guy, represented Deepak and Wayne Dyer and Louise Hay and just about every other big
wow.
name in that space. So I got exposure to, and those people ended up becoming my clients and customers. So I think the real answer to the question is, it came from a quote from Manifest Your Destiny, which was a book by Wayne Dyer that I listened to the audiobook probably 300 times. And it was something to the effect of, who do I need to become right now to become attractive to that which I desire? And one distinction he had is, everything you desire already belongs to you, and and you belong to it. And the only thing separating you from it is time. And I would also add to that, action, implementation. But taking on that mindset made me feel comfortable in my own skin and get over a lot of old trauma that I had been carrying around from, you know, being feeling stupid my whole life, feeling poor, feeling less than, not being good at it, just not knowing what I was good at and not
sure.
feeling good at it, and not getting feedback from peers who were equals, you know. And the thing is I think the net is our riches And this is a Brian Tracy quote, which is, our lives are changed by the books we read and the people we meet. And I would go so far as to say, our lives are transformed by the people we surround ourselves with that hold us to the high standard that they see inside us, the spark, the spirit, and the divine inspiration. And sometimes we can't see it in ourselves. It's just the nature of the ego. And it takes a long time until you can learn to control your own ego and also see past your own delusions and illusions that are keeping you stuck. And so, you know, you just got to get a freaking great coach. You got to surround yourself and be the stupidest person in the room. And if you're not the dumbest person in the room in a group, it's time to move on to a new group and be pushed to a new state.
Yeah, no, and I know we both agree in that area. We kind of run in some similar circles with it. Surrounding yourself with the right people, I think, is definitely a big key. You know, and then taking a step back is, you know, writing, get everything down, getting a clear, concise vision of who you are, where you want to go, is definitely a major key piece in transforming your life and moving things forward. So that's really awesome.
Yeah.
And so now kind of moving on. Okay. So that was your, you know, your big failure you had. Now you've had some awesome wins as well.
Yeah.
You even have your own show out there today still, right?
Yeah, it just got picked up for TV. It's on cable now.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah. We did first season 20 episodes, and I got it picked up on TV, and now I'm planning out season two. And it's been really interesting. I've learned a lot from that experience. I could do 2 days just on doing shows, man.
That'll be a whole nother episode.
Right on.
No, congratulations. That's awesome. I know you've been working hard at that for a while, so. So tell me about what's been, I guess, your most best or biggest business success and then the most fruitful in the terms of, like, not maybe dollar wise, but what that purpose type business was for you.
Yeah. Well, I'll give you the lowdown. So I think the big distinction here is Gary Vaynerchuk articulated this really, really well, which is, you got to be in the dirt all the time. And whenever I'm at my very finest, it means I am working with people who have big freaking problems and can't figure out how to, you know, sock their way out of a wet paper bag or dig themselves out of the holes they're in.
Sure.
And so it's in helping them and creating some transformation. So back when I first got married, I first moved to San Diego, I was consulting with a lot of authors and experts, and I had a garage studio. I was doing video and audio for them. And along the way, I figured out how to hack the search engine. So I figured out how to massively generate highly searched engine web pages, and I built a utility with a friend of mine that could generate over 50,000 optimized pages a minute, and then I'd submit them, and I could own and dominate just about any search engine. And I was selling my time still to higher end clients and customers that would hire me, like Citrix, for example, would hire me to generate all these pages to advertise an event, for example.
Sure.
So if you fast forward a little bit, I also figured out how to do that with video. And this is, again, in the early days of online video, before there was a YouTube, it cost a fortune to put video online, and you're relegated to little tiny postage stamp videos, and you had to convert it into Flash and do all kinds of complicated plug-in crap, and it sucked. So I had a client, and I had been shooting videos, testimonial videos, for an integrative hospital located in Mexico. They did treatments that weren't available in the U.S. So the point is, I'm surrounded with a lot of people with a lot of problems, and all of them had one big problem in particular in common, which is they needed to find a way to get attention, engage an audience, get people to know, like, and trust them, and buy their stuff, at least pick up the phone, right? And I knew that video could do it, and I had created a product called the Internet Infomercial Toolkit. It was me learning how to persuade and influence using video, and I adapted the television infomercial, which changed my life, into something that would work online. But the problem was, there wasn't an easy way to get that video all over the place and start showing up in the search engines. And what I figured out how to do is hack the first online video service, which was Google Video, in such a way that if you uploaded your video within about 15 or 20 minutes, you showed up in Google's results, which meant you showed up in Yahoo's results and elsewhere. And with a buddy that I met at an event, interestingly, we built a utility that evolved into Traffic Geyser, which was a push-button utility. You put your content in this thing, press a button, it would go online. Well, YouTube came out. And then pretty soon, 30, and then 50, and then 75 video search engines came out. And then what happened next is we figured out how to social bookmark and social network. And the net is I met Frank Kern through a mutual friend. And, you know, he was at the time this mysterious surfer dude living in La Jolla. And I had been living in California actually longer than he did. And I had wanted to meet him. But we got together through this mutual friend. And I helped him out with some video marketing. He really didn't know how to make videos and put them online. And I had a lot of equipment. I showed him the process. I introduced him to my video editor, who this day he still works with. And I became sort of a poster child for a product he was releasing called Mass Control. And he said, why don't I tell everyone in my list about Traffic Geyser? So he came over, we did an interview, and I took his Mass Control video, I put it in Traffic Geyser, we pressed a button, and 20 minutes later, it was all over the place, okay? On video, completely unscripted. Well, we released that video, and I got a lot of people who got into my software, okay, because we had a $1 trial.
Oh, wow.
And then my business model was recurring. It was a monthly $97 a month for that software. Well, as soon as he did it, because he was such an influencer, a whole bunch of other people got on board and said, hey, can I promote it to my list? And it was like, bam, 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 bam. It was like crazy.
Yeah.
But here's what happened. About a year later, I was talking to, interviewing, and chatting with my customers, and I noticed that almost all of our most successful customers who use Traffic Geyser the most were small business owners who were doing video marketing for other small businesses. They were using the tools and agency, and some of them had built seven-figure agencies in a year. Okay, they were charging like $10,000 because it was special, secret, magical sauce because no one knew how to crack the search engines quite this easily by making a video and pressing a button, basically. And I started interviewing them, and I found out what the common patterns, the common threads that all of them did, and I overlaid that, and there I had a system, okay? Wow. So we ended up creating a system by interviewing our own customers, figuring out the best practices, building it, and selling it as what became the Firepower Business Builder Blueprint. And we made $1.6 million during a one-week launch. That's and the way awesome. The story goes – I called my mom. I said, hey, mom, I made $1 million in a week. And my mom was like, that's great, honey. Your dad's outside shoveling the snow. Why don't I have him? I'll have him come in. You can tell him the story. And I told my dad, and he goes, we're really proud of you, son. What does that exactly do? Something online with computers or something? Something with the internet? And but the best thing is I said to my parents, I said, the best part is I know how to do it again. Well, 5 months later, we launched a product called Main Street Marketing Machines. And this time I called up my mom and I said, mom, I made $1 million in 44 minutes because we had started the launch and I had the support of some of the biggest people online, Frank and Jeff Walker and all those guys at the time. And we hit $2 million in a minute in an hour and 14 minutes. And we did $9.1 million in sales. But I'm telling you, that was the result of hard effing work, and it doesn't mean I got to keep all the money,
right?
Because we grew too fast. I hired too many people. I made every classic stupid entrepreneurial mistake, listening to the wrong people. I had people, you know, it was just insane what happened. But we blew up. I mean, we got to like from, you know, $500,000 in sales to $1 million in sales to $4 million, and then $13 million in sales a couple of years in a row. I mean, we were just rolling. But at the time, we weren't keeping much of that because it was like, oh, let's plow it back into the business. Let's grow the business. Let's hire more people. Let's expand the software instead of sticking to our knitting and doing one thing really, really well. So, you know, all the follies of a young man and with a big ego. I learned a lot of lessons, man.
I think that's the classic story of all the entrepreneurs. You know, you get in and you're driving hard and you keep putting that money back in and everything and you, like you said, you don't have that experience or that mentor or somebody to help kind of guide you along.
You don't even know what's going on. You don't take a moment to breathe.
Right.
I mean, until I got forced it, you know, a couple of years ago when I was diagnosed with cancer, and that was like, you know, time stopped.
Sure.
Whether I liked it or not, you know, and that definitely a lot of my friends, a lot of people in the industry tell me they like the post-cancer Mike a lot better than the pre-cancer Mike.
And I like them better too.
So what'd you take, you know, I guess, you know, with all your businesses and then, you know, actually getting, you know, cancer, I mean, how did that transform your life, or how did you look at your life from that point forward?
Yeah. Well, I think the biggest thing is, a couple things happened. Some of them were professional, some of them were personal. The biggest one is, when your body doesn't work, and part of the best way I can frame this is, at my worst case, after having major surgery, and look, I didn't know if I was going to for sure survive. At the time, the doctor came to me and he said, look, you got a big freaking tumor inside you. If you don't get that thing cut out, this is the kind that's going to kill you, and you will probably not recover in 6 months if you don't do something about it now. Like, make an appointment now. So, and at my worst, after getting the surgery, and again, cancer is an odds game. It's stats and it's numbers. And it's all about, if you do this, this increases your probability of survival by that. Sure. And I got a young boy at the time. He was 10. He's 13 now. But I'm like, I'm going to stick around for him. And at the expense of maybe some things that could happen to me later from the treatments, in this case, between surgery, pretty intense chemotherapy and then radiation. I was too late stage to do an integrative therapy or fully integrated therapy that had a high probability of success. And here's the thing. Integrative medical doctors, there's a jillion out there, and it's hard to differentiate which ones are real and which ones aren't.
Right.
And they don't go to prison for giving you bad advice, where a doctor will and does, okay? And we could argue that point forever. But the bottom line is, I'm at Duke University Medical Treatment Center, 2,500 miles away from home, laying in a pile of my hair that I'm waking up into every day because your hair falls out. I got an hour of strength a day, and time stops. And the good news was, I was able to get some good people I trusted who I've known a long time to come in and help run my business, including a buddy of mine I've known for 30 years who cleaned it up. And the truth is, my businesses ran better and were more profitable when I wasn't there. How's that for
That's it.
It's because I was spinning so fast and telling people what to do and being an entrepreneur with 10 ideas a day, giving the wrong people the wrong, you know, it's just like stupid stuff.
Right.
The good news is, that's me. You know, it's like, I'm an innovator. I solve problems and I know how to solve them fast. The thing is you got to have the right kind of people who can interpret that and implement without breaking a bunch of other stuff in the meantime. what we call my alter ego is the disruptosaurus.
Right. I saw that.
Right. Yeah. But what I can tell you is I made a lot of big decisions. I came back. I really cleaned up my life. I slowed down. I simplified a lot, but I also wrote my first book. And then I ended up writing 3 books while I was recovering from treatment. Each one of those became a business. Each one became a launch. Each one became a multi-million dollar movement. And invariably, it became one of the best business opportunities ever, because what's the first thing someone who meets you says when they find out you're an author? You know, how'd you do it? How long did it take? And do you know someone who can help me write my book? And it's like, yes, as a matter of fact, I think I can help you. I mean, we basically taught people how to do books as a business for other people. We've gone on to, it's the new Main Street marketing machines, basically. It's a fantastic business, and it accelerates and really pushes you and makes you an authority and an expert. And it just changes everything. And it allows you to tell your story in a way that, to a captive audience, and replicate yourself. So anyway, the bottom line, my biggest takeaway with cancer was, you know, my boy, even at 13, he's as tall as me. He still instinctively reaches up and he holds my hand when we walk. And I have a picture of that that I carry around everywhere I go. And anytime someone says, hey, Mike, can I pick your brain? Can I take you out for lunch? I have a couple rules. The first one is, I don't let anything get in the way of another moment with my son, especially these innocent moments when he still does that, right? And brings a tear to my eye just thinking about it. So my other rules are, I'm not going to work with anyone who's cheap on their way to success. And if you don't pay, you don't pay attention. So if I'm going to take time and spend it with someone, they're going to make an investment, because I would prefer to trade that time in with my son. And there is no trade here. I'll take my son over any business opportunity any day of the week. You know, I make my Sunday my Sabbath with my family. Even though I married a Jew, I was raised a Catholic, and I'm not really affiliated or associated with any particular belief system. But I take that day off because the silence and the family time is important for the brain. And I never used to do that before. But I'm going to work with people who are serious. And if they're not serious enough to invest in a coach, just like I invest probably $250,000. I'm in 7 mastermind groups. I'm in a hotel room talking to you right now because I invest an enormous amount of resources, time, energy, and money into people who are better than me. And if I don't have skin on the line, that's relatively painful. Nothing's going to happen. So right. I invest in expensive masterminds when I couldn't at the time. Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that fully answers your question, but it's how you slice time and be conscious of every freaking waking moment and determining where you're going to expend that energy. And everything around you is either giving you energy or it's taken. If it's a pile of books or magazines that's sitting on your bedstand, every time you look at that, it's sucking something out of you, you know?
Yeah.
The concept of feng shui has validity. So I think you're just paying attention and being conscious, and knowing that there is a benefit to getting put in a place where you get the wind knocked out of you, where you get to re-examine life, whether you like it or not, has value. Failures are teachers and trainers, and fail forward fast by all, you know, that's the secret to a great life, I think.
No, and that's a great takeaway. I mean, and even a part of that is, you know, I really try to spend time with my family and then teaching my kids, like, hey, guys, it's okay to fail. That's what's going to help make the big changes in life, help you learn, and help you towards what's going to make you successful.
Right on, man.
So, well, cool. We're almost out of time. What? Give me something that's the best technological item that you can't live without.
Well, I'm going to tell you a technological item. This is going to sound so like I have every gadget imaginable. I drive a gadget. You know, I had a Tesla right. Roadster when it first came out. And, you know, after selling my businesses, I had enough, you know, income where I could just buy a lot of stuff. And you know, I've really gotten simple lately. So my best gadget is, no kidding, it's my iPhone and 2 apps. One of them is rev.com, because everywhere I go, I dictate, I record, and I have stuff transcribed, and I create plans and action plans. And then another app called Tape a Call. And Tape a Call lets you record phone conversations. It bridges them, which is a really, really handy cool. thing. And I could go on and on, man. I can give you a book of gadgets. I mean, in my show, I do a gadget review or two every episode. And but an iPhone is a portable television studio in your pocket that you can change the world with. And like, I'm doing this from my phone on a selfie stick right now on a table in a hotel. It's a miracle. And the reality is, all of us can be communicating with almost half the human race right now. Most of them, you know, there's billions of smartphones out there. You can be doing business with everyone. And the real thing is, like, how are you going to package and tell your story? So I look at it as a portable storytelling device, a broadcast device that allows you to bring peace on this planet by conducting commerce. You know, it's like, I think make business. Entrepreneurs are the last bastion of, you know, we've got an economy, we've got a world economic system and everything else that could fall apart at any moment. But if you got good ideas, you can implement and do deals by influencing, persuading, and building an engaged audience, man. The world is your oyster, always has been, always will be.
Cool. Awesome. And where can our audience, if they want some more information on you and go find you and your show and everything?
Sure. Well, I think the first one is go to my website, and I'm going to give you a shortcut link, which is mrbz.com. So it's like Mr. Biz with no
MRBZ,
vowels.
MRBZ, all right.
Yeah, mrbz.com or mikekoenigs.com. It goes to the same place. Subscribe to my podcast, which is mrbz.com/podcast. Follow me there. And you can go grab a couple of my books. There's one. This is one of them called Publish and Profit. It's free on my website.
Cool.
Yeah, and I'm a huge believer in write a book, because it's the best way to package yourself imaginable. And the greatest gift you can give me is take some advice, implement, and write to me. You know, I'll see you on Facebook or Twitter or whatever, and tell me how you're using a tool that's going to change or save a life or help you reinvent yourself. You know, that's what I live for. It's like when someone walks up and says, you don't know me, but I've been watching you. I've been listening to you for years, and you gave me this piece of advice. One little nugget, it changed my life. And I know you feel that too, Josh. Yeah. I mean, you got people walk up to you, and having a show positions you, it elevates you, it puts you in a different field that most people don't get to, and it just enables you to change lives and make them better, and you get rewarded along the way. It's just a beautiful, beautiful thing, and a beautiful way the universe works.
Definitely. And Mike, it's an honor to have you on the show. I've followed your work for a while, so it's
thanks, man.
Been really awesome to be able to connect and share your story, and hopefully gives our audience some awesome nuggets of information from you today. So thanks for coming on Making Bank.
It's my pleasure, my friend. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to be on your platform.
Sure. Thank you again. I am Josh Felber, and you are watching Making Bank. Get out and be extraordinary.
Making Bank is also available for download on iTunes and Stitcher.